Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open with news about state officials raiding the homes of the former Public Utilities Chairman Michael Peavy and a top PG&E official. Plus, hear why a La Mesa activist is calling for the California Attorney General to broaden her investigation into corruption allegations against Peavy and the CPUC. On our Capitol Report, we'll have updates from Washington on a proposed border act and bills to help combat human trafficking. Locally, we'll tell you how supervisors voted on a measure to allow involuntary treatment of people with mental health problems. In our health report, hear why doctors went out on strike Tuesday at UC Student Health Centers, plus hear about San Diego's first pediatric heart transplant. And learn why Grossmont Center may be in for some big changes now that the original owners have taken back control of the 50-year regional shopping mall and surrounding properties in La Mesa. Our intern, Hayden Parsley, will take you on the road to Hakumba Hot Springs for a visit to the Desert View Tower. And then on Destination East County, hear about the hottest events coming up across our region, from our own East County Treasures sale this Saturday to Circus Vargas, bringing its big top performances to El Cajon. On the second half of our show, we'll replay our interview with Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Group and founder of a citizens organization that has vowed to sue the county if planners approve a controversial industrial energy project up for a hearing on February 4th. Then from Public News Service, we'll have the latest hot national news as well as some Super Bowl Sunday safety tips. And speaking of hot, hear just how hot it was last year, the hottest year on record since the 1880s. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Investigators from the California Attorney General's office raided the home of former Public Utilities Commission Chairman Michael Peavy this week, seizing computers and smartphones. State law enforcement officials also seized evidence from the home of Pacific Gas and Electric Company executive Brian Cherry, the San Francisco Chronicle reports. Activists in San Diego have long complained that Peavy represented the interests of utilities, not ratepayers or the public. The raids are part of an investigation into allegations of improper communications between Peavy and other PUC officials with PG&E executives. Emails obtained through public records have revealed that Peavy and staff sought to help PG&E evade responsibility for the deadly San Bruno gas pipeline explosion that killed 8 people and leveled an entire neighborhood. Peavy even offered to control selection of administrative law judges in a rate-setting case. In addition, he helped solicit campaign contributions to oppose a ballot measure that utilities objected to, and he solicited funds from the utility giant to pay for a centennial celebration for the PUC, the agency that is supposed to regulate utilities, not pander to their wishes. Peavy resigned in December. Cherry was fired over the illicit communications. Mike Aguirre, the former San Diego city attorney, challenged Peavy at a public hearing last year over his cozy ties to Southern California Edison and questioned his impartiality in the San Onofre nuclear power plant controversy. Peavy, clearly peeved, refused to answer Aguirre's questions and was caught on video ordering Aguirre to shut up, even though Aguirre was representing California ratepayers' interests at that proceeding. Now, Susan Brinkman at the Center for Electrosmog Prevention, a La Mesa resident who has been battling the PUC over smart meter proceedings, says she believes Peavy unduly influenced decisions on smart meters as well. "I have seen so much evidence of corruption at the CPUC that it is appalling," Brinkman wrote in an email to East County Magazine. She adds, "Judges who appeared sympathetic to the consumer were regularly changed out for those who would do what Peavy wanted, which meant what the utilities wanted. For instance, boldly, in writing, as part of each proceeding, the CPUC refused to cover health and safety within the scope of the proceeding, contrary to CPUC policy and state law," Brinkman adds. Peavy's proposal for the smart meter opt-out was adopted by the commission in December, just before he resigned. This last week, Brinkman's organization filed for a rehearing due to his stance for the Phase 2 smart meter opt-out proceeding, which recently closed after a decision favorable to utilities. Brinkman notes that Carol Brown, Michael Peavy's chief of staff, who was forced to resign in September, is now an administrative law judge at the PUC, making decisions daily that impact consumer health and safety, after she was caught making deals to help PG&E after their neglected leaky gas lines blew up in a neighborhood in San Bruno. That explosion killed 8, including a PUC staffer, who was the top whistleblower at the PUC for gas pipeline leaks, and her young daughter. Their house was ground zero for the explosion. That staffer, Jacqueline Grigg, worked for the Division of Ratepayer Advocates, an independent arm of the PUC which takes the side of utility customers in matters before the commission and provides input to regulators in defense of consumers. Brinkman calls the PUC a completely corrupted, rogue state agency that is endangering the public, extending far beyond Peavy. She observes, key staff are frequently recycled, utility attorneys or top staff from utility companies, and they do whatever the utilities want. It doesn't seem to matter how dangerous. People who traveled to San Francisco to testify to the PUC that they believe smart meters made them ill due to pulsed radiation were treated rudely by Peavy, according to Brinkman, who suspects Peavy engineered to close those proceedings without discussing health problems. Another complaint is that the PUC has tended to award intervener fees only to interveners who support utility positions, while denying fees or approving only token compensation to those who file legal interventions on behalf of consumers, such as Mike Aguirre, whose intervener fees were recently denied in the San Onofre ratepayer case. The La Mesa activist, Brinkman, is calling on California's Attorney General to investigate Peavy for his conduct in the smart grid and smart meter proceedings in addition to the gas pipeline explosion. She concludes, the CPUC is so riddled with conflicts and corruption that it is truly unrecognizable as a regulatory agency and routinely can be said to cause physical harm to the people of California. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
Leaders of the United States House of Representatives have decided to postpone a vote on the Secure Our Borders Act. Otherwise known as H.R. 399, the bill was called for by Republicans and would require the border agency to stop all illegal border crossings within 5 years or be penalized. This would surely be a daunting task. With nearly 2,000 miles of border with Mexico and thousands of people attempting to cross over, some say this task is impossible. Texas Republican and Homeland Security Committee Chair Michael McCaul calls it the strongest border security bill ever, KPBS reports. However, there has been much opposition to this bill in Congress. Democrats, many Republicans, and the Union of Border Patrol Agents are all against the bill. In addition to the requirements the bill would impose, it would also call for more fencing and an even larger drone fleet. The Border Drone Program has drawn criticism from the Department of Homeland Security in the past, who claim it is ineffective and a poor use of taxpayer money. Sean Moran, Vice President of the National Border Patrol Council, described the bill as disappointing. He says, the National Border Patrol Council opposes H.R. 399 in its current form due to its lack of strategy to increase border security and its failure to close loopholes that amount to a catch-and-release program for many immigration crimes, KPBS reports. The Border Council says that they should instead be supplied with more agents, rifles, and communication equipment. They describe this bill as window dressing. Regardless of the decision of the House, the White House has said the President will veto any bill that would interfere with his executive order on deportation standards. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
It's rare for both parties in Congress to agree on anything these days, but the House of Representatives has just approved 10 bills to help combat human trafficking. All 5 of San Diego's congressional representatives voted in favor of 2 of the bills, and the rest passed by voice vote without a roll call of members. The bills enhance law enforcement efforts, increase training to better identify signs of human trafficking, and look at ways to improve current practices. A recent report by the Urban Institute studied 8 cities in America and singled out San Diego as a leader in gang activity surrounding prostitution. Congresswoman Susan Davis supported all 10 of these bills. She states, "Sadly, incidents of human trafficking are still prevalent throughout the world. This legislative package will improve efforts of the federal government and help our communities combat the exploitation of people, especially children." Here are some highlights of the legislative package. H.R. 181 provides assistance to state and local law enforcement to strengthen investigation and prosecution of sex trafficking. It also bolsters victims' support programs to help them restore their lives. H.R. 398 provides evidence-based training for health professionals to help identify signs of human trafficking. H.R. 460 directs the Secretary of Homeland Security to train personnel to better detect, deter, and prevent human trafficking. H.R. 468 increases opportunities for nonprofit private agencies to provide services to runaway and homeless youths who can become victims of trafficking. The remainder of the bills would coordinate international efforts and engage in research to ensure that best practices are used and updated to stop human trafficking. These measures now move to the U.S. Senate for approval. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The San Diego County Board of Supervisors voted this week to implement involuntary treatment for mentally ill patients. The legislation that would allow this is known as Laura's Law. The motion was passed 4-1 on Tuesday. Staff now has 90 days to develop a plan to implement the law countywide. Laura's Law was passed on the state level in 2002, but it is the county's choice whether or not to put it into action. The law is designed to allow better care for severely mentally ill people. The law would allow family members, doctors, or the police to seek a court order to provide care for patients who refuse treatment, have a history of being jailed or hospitalized, or pose a danger to themselves or others. The law seeks to keep mentally ill people off the streets and out of prison. Many argue that this law would violate the rights of the patient. Supporters counter this, however, by saying that the law would allow someone who believed they were being treated unfairly to bring their case before a judge. Nevada County, which has had the law implemented since 2010, has already implemented Laura's Law. So far, they have reported fewer incarcerations, hospitalizations, emergency interventions, and incidences of homelessness. This has been Leon Thompson for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. Doctors at University of California Student Health Centers went out on strike Tuesday, including physicians who picketed locally at UC San Diego. It's rare for doctors to strike, in part because most are not unionized. But on campus, the doctors are members of the Union of American Physicians and Dentists. So, doctors wearing white coats held protest signs on campuses across California. Union members voted for the one-day strike over disagreements with management on how the UC Health Centers should be operated. The doctors have diagnosed a problem with the system, which allots only about 15 minutes per patient, even for students with multiple medical issues or serious mental health concerns. UC San Diego reports that doctors at UC campuses also earn significantly less than their colleagues in the private sector, which can make recruitment and retention of physicians challenging. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego's first pediatric heart transplant patient was released from Rady's Children's Hospital Tuesday. This is following a 12-day stay and a successful surgery. The child's name is Eric Montaño. He's an 11-year-old boy who was diagnosed with restrictive cardiomyopathy, which stopped his heart from properly filling with blood. Eric has been on a waiting list from August until January 14th when the surgery was performed. The doctors say he has a good chance of surviving for at least 20 to 30 more years now that the transplant has proven successful, KPBS reports. Eric also has a twin brother, Raul, who is currently still on the waiting list for a transplant of his own. Pediatric procedures of this kind are incredibly rare, with only 500 worldwide each year. San Diego now has the capacity to perform the operation. Before, a patient requiring a transplant of this kind would have had to travel all the way to Los Angeles or San Francisco.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Big changes could soon be coming to Grossmont Center. At the La Mesa City Council meeting on Tuesday night, January 27th, Steve Cushman gave a presentation regarding the future of the regional shopping mall and surrounding properties owned by the Cushman family. A 50-year lease with developers at the shopping center expired in mid-January, and now the shopping mall and adjacent properties are reverting back to the Cushman family. That includes 125 acres extending beyond the mall itself. The land encompasses three medical buildings in the Grossmont Medical Center on the east to Interstate 8 and the north side of Jackson Drive from Friar Tuck's to Frazee's. An area also includes properties on Grossmont Center Drive, such as Red Lobster and BevMo. Cushman told the council, the family is committed to reinvesting in the center. He added that the many leases have been renewed with retailers. The mall is now over 95% re-leased, and the medical buildings are more than 83% leased. But major renovations could be on the horizon. Cushman indicated that the family is considering multiple options and no decision has been made. One possibility would be major redevelopment that could include residential above retail. CVS Pharmacy could become residential, and the Red Lobster site might become a hotel. Student housing for SDSU students close to transit is yet another possibility. He also indicated that a lease has been negotiated to convert Arby's into a Sonic drive-thru. According to Cushman, the combined properties currently amount for 20% of La Mesa's sales tax revenues, revenues that potentially could increase if major new retail or hotel space is added. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hakumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hakumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hakumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has events ranging from our own East County Treasures event to an art show at Mission Trails Regional Park. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a Ballet Folklorio dance performance and Circus Vargas bringing its mesmerizing performances to our region. Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
East County Magazine invites you to our special benefit event, East County Treasures, on Saturday, January 31st from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event features four sales in one location at the 1625 East Main Street in El Cajon location, including arts and craft vendors, Valentine's gift basket, a silent auction, and a yard sale with treasures from multiple communities. Proceeds benefit East County Magazine's nonprofit community reporting and wildfire alerts. For more information, including how to donate items or reserve space for arts and crafts, visit eastcountymagazine.org.
Trouble in mind. a groundbreaking classic about a racially integrated cast rehearsing for what the actors hope will be the next big hit on Broadway. Take stage at the Moxie Theater, 6063 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego from January 31st through February 22nd. Plus, on February 8th, you can join the director and actors for a post-show discussion to learn more about the play and enrich your theater-going experience. The playwright, Alice Childress, was the first African-American woman to have a professional play produced in New York. For tickets and details, visit moxietheater.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park is displaying works of 7 award-winning artists in one show. The works, created in a variety of mediums, are on display through January 30th in the Visitor Center Art Gallery. For details, visit mtrp.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Circus Vargas will bring its newest big top tent circus performance, Arlequin, to the parking lot at Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon from February 5th through the 9th. The circus features an array of dazzling performers, including aerialists, acrobats, clowns, and more. For tickets and details, visit circusvargas.com.
Grossmont Center invites you to surround yourself with puppy love. The shopping mall in La Mesa will hold a Cupids and Canines pet adoption event on February 7th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Over 100 dogs and puppies from 17 local rescue groups will be at Grossmont Center looking for a loving home. You will be able to meet, play, and learn more about each canine. Plus, if you find your perfect match, you can adopt and take home a furry new member of the family just in time for Valentine's Day.
Florio, a dance theater musical production by the Ballet Folklorio and Atzlan, will be presented on February 8th at 2 p.m. in the Muette Dance Studio, which is located in Lemon Grove. The show features the indigenous dancing and costumes of Mexico.
La Mesa Police Chief Ed Aceves will speak at La Mesa Chamber of Commerce Breakfast on Tuesday, February 10th at 7:30 a.m. at the Marie Callender's Breakfast. That's at 6950 Alvarado Road in La Mesa. Chief Aceves will share his thoughts and vision for La Mesa as he hands over the reins of the police department to his successor. For more information or reservations, visit lamesachamber.com.
Bernardo Winery invites you to its annual Vino Valentino Valentine's Day dinner on Saturday, February 14th at 6 p.m. This year's evening of romance includes a carriage ride through the vineyard, buffet dinner and carving station by Café Merlot, crepes made to order in the barrel room, live music on the patio, wine by the glass, a chocolate pairing, and espresso drinks. For more information and details, visit BernardoWinery.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The VA House Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the VA House Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Donna Tisdell, who is the chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, as well as the founder of Backcountry Against Dumps, or BAD. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Miriam.
We're talking today about a very important vote coming up. A hearing coming up on February 4th before the County Board of Supervisors about industrial-scale solar projects proposed by Soitec Solar that, if approved, would radically change the face of the backcountry forever. Donna, can you start by telling us a little bit about the areas where these would go in? And your planning group voted unanimously to oppose these, but last week the county planners ignored that recommendation and recommended approving two of the four projects. And now the supervisors will have the option to approve all of them, none of them, some of them. We don't really know what they're going to do. Tell us what the land is like where these projects are proposed and give us an idea of the scale of them as well.
Well, two of the Soitec projects were approved by the planning commissioners. Almost 800 acres for the Rugged Solar is located in McCain Valley. It would straddle the Tule Creek floodplain, which drains into Tule Lake. This is at the entrance of the McCain Valley Resource Conservation Area and Recreation Area and many wilderness areas. So to go and recreate in the backcountry, you would have to drive through these 30-foot tall, 800 acres of glaring solar panels.
Yeah, each one of these is 30 feet tall.
And 50 feet wide.
50 feet wide, yeah. And this is along a designated scenic highway. So I'm not sure if that's the kind of scenery folks had in mind when that designation was given out.
And the second project is the 420-acre Tierra del Sol project, which is located down on the U.S.-Mexico border with homes as close as 100 feet wow. and immediately across from Jardines del Rincón, which is an ejido on the Mexican side of the border.
100 feet. Can you imagine walking out your front door, folks, and looking at a veritable sea of solar panels of this scale staring at you? And now, Donna, when people bought out there in this community, what were the rules as far as what you could or couldn't put on your property and how big those?
Due to the fact that we are groundwater dependent and we have limited resources and services, during the general plan update in 2011, the Board of Supervisors approved one dwelling unit per 80 acres on these two project sites. So a total of 15 homes would be allowed where they're proposing to put, you know, almost 2 square miles of solar panels. It's just, and yet they claim that it was in harmony and bulk and scale with our community, which is,
yeah,
you know, a stretch.
But there's a lot more than just the visual impact, negative though that presumably would be. There is fears about the impacts on wildlife, for one thing, bighorn sheep, golden eagles, a lot of the major wildlife groups, Anzabrego Desert Park Foundation, the Nature Conservancy, Fish and Wildlife Service have all voiced serious concerns about the impacts on endangered species out there. And beyond that, water. I think the biggest issue out here that I've seen is the fact that we had the Eco Substation go in. They said it would use 30 million gallons of groundwater. It used 90 million gallons. And can you tell us how much groundwater the developer says these projects would use and some of the reasons that you believe it's going to use a lot more?
People don't realize that in the backcountry to build industrial scale solar, you have to scrape all the chaparral, all the vegetation, and rearrange the soil. And when you do that, you release the carbon that's been sequestered there. It takes millions of gallons of water. And I believe they are up to almost 70 million gallons of water for these projects. And I said, we only have groundwater available. They're talking about taking water from the wells on site, but they're not sustainable enough, so they're going to have to import water from wells in Acumba and wells in Pine Valley.
So 70 million gallons that they admit to.
We caught them in a major omission. Howard Cook, the former chairman of the Acumba sponsor group, mm-hmm. caught a major error where they had left out huge components of the project. And so they had to go back and revise their groundwater investigations and increase the water use by almost 40%.
Yeah, and there's some really big things that were left out of the environmental impact report during the time when the public had the right to give input and make comments. I'll give just one example here. They left out 160 battery modules, each one the size of a large metal ocean shipping container. And these are additions that you've said could exponentially increase the risk of fire. And, of course, there's a lot of groundwater that would be used for the concrete foundations for all these things. And yet they won't open up the AR. I mean, who would think that?
That was a late hit, and that was added to the final AR, 160 cargo containers worth of full of Lion batteries. And this is unprecedented in the world. We don't know of any place that is proposing such a huge amount of battery storage. So they're prone to fire, and they each have to have their own air conditioning and ventilation system, which uses a lot of energy. It just doesn't make sense to us to do all of this so far out away from the city, where we use minimal, maybe 2 megawatts of energy for our entire community, when these projects should be built, distributed throughout the urban areas and suburban areas on existing structures and over parking lots.
Right, and the batteries, especially if there was a fire, as has occurred at some other battery storage facilities at big energy projects, there's also an issue with toxins being released in the smoke, dumped in the ground. It could become sort of a giant toxic waste dump, I would think.
Yes, that's a major issue for us. Our communities had to try and find the money to hire some experts to at least get this information into the administrative record. We are concerned that the Board of Supervisors will just go ahead and rubber stamp these projects, and then we're going to have to take them to court.
Yeah. We're going to get to the lawsuit in just a moment. I want to talk a little more about fire danger, though. These projects not only have the solar panels, but, of course, there's a lot of infrastructure, high-voltage power lines that they're going to be hooked up to. And yet your area is an area where there's been some big problems with a lack of fire safety. Closed fire stations during fire season. You've had multiple fires. The Harris Fire burned through this general area, fueled by 100-mile-an-hour winds.
So we had the 2,500-acre Shockey Fire, which burned 11 homes and killed one of my neighbors, which just missed the Tierra del Sol solar project. They proposed almost 10 miles of overhead high-voltage lines for these projects, and one of them goes right through the footprint of the Shockey Fire.
Yeah, and to be clear, we reported on the Shockey Fire. This was a fire that occurred when there were no other fires burning, and it was not a particularly high wind period. There were some winds, but nothing near what we saw during the Harris Fire, and yet even then, it rapidly spread out of control, burned houses, and as you've noted, killed an elderly gentleman. If they couldn't stop that when there was no other fire burning and not particularly severe weather conditions, how are they going to stop a fire that could start at this solar facility or even one that were to start off-site and then hit those batteries?
These are huge electrical generating facilities, and the Soitec CPV, their dual trackers, they have a lot of electrical components. They have inverters, they have transformers, they've got gears, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong electronically and can spark a fire. And those fires can get quickly out of hand. Even today, recently I learned that our Boulevard Fire Station was dark, meaning no firefighters there for 7 days in December and several days already in January. Now, the county is building a new fire station for us that will be managed by CAL FIRE. But there again, we are concerned, which has been consistently a problem, that there will not be the proper staff or the equipment on hand to handle these massive industrial fire potential.
Right. Last year, we did a report, and we found out that the Boulevard Fire Station was closed for 3 months during fire season. Our article kind of shamed some folks, I think, into coming up with emergency funding, but apparently the problem is still not completely solved. And also the foam truck that was part of the mitigation for some other energy projects out there and was supposed to be close by to make it easier to put fires out that would start at a big energy project, and we found out it was being stored at Lake Moreno, almost an hour away.
It was in another community because they weren't staffing Hacumba or Boulevard, and so you have to have staff to run equipment.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And then back to the water for a moment. Now, Victor Ponce, who is a hydrology expert at San Diego State University, studied this project, the Soitec solar proposals, and he concluded that if they were built at all, the water should be imported, because if they relied on groundwater, that it could forever change the ecosystem out there, devastate the ecosystem, because there simply would not be enough groundwater. They would be using more than could be replaced by rainfall. So how can the planners down there just ignore that? I mean, what did they have to say about that?
They rely on consulting companies like DUDEC, and DUDEC is a consultant hired by the applicant to produce the environmental document and the groundwater investigations, and they are paid to say there's no problems. And so they put in a lot of empty information, and they hope that nobody reads these things and catches them.
Yeah, but DUDEC is the same company that has consistently underestimated water use at several other major projects recently. They don't seem to learn from their experience.
Dr. Ponce was hired by some homeowners around the Madeira Golf Course in Poway because they were concerned about the proposed pumping at groundwater wells that would dry up their wells. And DUDEC came in and said, oh, there's not a problem. So the city said, okay, go ahead and you can start pumping. And within 60 days, the neighbors' wells were drying up, and there was problems at the golf course itself. So we've already got an evidence that DUDEC is not always right.
Right. Now, apart from all of the ecological problems, water use, fire danger, and certainly the inconvenience and potential loss of property values and rural character for the residents, there's another problem here. And that's that Soitec itself, which is a French company, they opened a factory in San Diego amid much hoopla, got a big federal grant. They were going to bring all kinds of jobs here to create these photovoltaic panels, concentrated photovoltaic panels. But Soitec is having serious financial problems. The issue is so bad. Their stock went down to just a quarter of what it was over the last year. And it's so bad that a Reuters analyst recommended that investors avoid Soitec stock. Like poison was the term they used. Many environmental publications have been coming out and energy industry publications predicting basically the failure of this facility here. And just within the last week or so, Soitec announced that they are laying off 100 people at the San Diego plant. So my question is, Donna, what are the ramifications if Soitec goes under or closes this facility? Who's going to maintain all these things and take care of them? I mean, are we concerned that a company with such big financial problems potentially could take some shortcuts that might come back to bite the community down the road?
That's a major concern, and one we've had all along. The Soitec concentrated photovoltaics, they're dual tracking, they're very expensive, much more expensive than the standard flat panel. They're not cost competitive at this point. In fact, independent analysts and Department of Energy peer review said they're basically out of the money and out of the market now. So, and even the board of directors for Soitec, the same day the planning commissioners were approving these projects, the board of directors for Soitec was saying, we're going to refocus our attention on areas other than solar. So the question is this facility even going to be here, the manufacturing facility? They've based a lot of the environmental document justifying it by the jobs that would be present at the manufacturing facility.
If, heaven forbid, the thing gets built, the supervisors approve it, and something bad happens. There's a fire, and it burns homes, or it spreads out of control and burns into San Diego. I guess it would be worst-case scenario that could occur, along with many other lesser-scale things that could go wrong. Do you think San Diego County taxpayers could be eventually on the hook for what might be construed as an irresponsible decision by the supervisors?
I haven't really thought things out that far. Anything is possible. The problem with these projects is they have no power purchase contracts. They originally had power purchase agreements with San Diego Gas and Electric, but through Soitec's inability to get these projects done, and one in Imperial County, and able to meet timelines and benchmarks, they've now lost all of their contracts. So they have zero power purchase contracts, and therefore they don't have any money coming in. I saw this morning on the county website that Soitec owes them another $20,000. The county wants that before the February 4th Board of Supervisors meeting, because this is all, staff. There's a lot of staff time involved in these projects.
So your group, BAD, Backcountry Against Dumps, which is an organization that started years ago fighting a landfill that was proposed out there successfully, I might add, and has since been kind of the rallying ground for other projects that the community has opposed. Your group has already stated publicly that if the supervisors approve this, you are going to file a lawsuit. Can you tell us a little bit about the grounds of that and what you think the likelihood is of success?
Backcountry has hired a Volcker Law Firm out of Oakland. He's got 40 years' experience in public interest environmental law, and he provided probably 50 pages of comments to the San Diego County Planning Commission, just listing the number of violations of the California Environmental Quality Act, the fact that this project, the EIR, is inadequate, it's flawed. They should have produced and recirculated an amended environmental document for public review. Instead, they changed the project by adding the battery storage, increasing the amount of water being used, and we really weren't allowed public comment. It was released mid-December. On January 8th, the planning staff came to our Boulevard Planning Group meeting, and they already had the recommendations for approval, and they hadn't even heard any public comments or input. So it's all predetermined, and in the word of many, the fix is in.
Wow. Certainly the supervisors, they're not here right now, but certainly they do have a mandate from the state that they have to meet certain renewable energy goals by certain dates not too far in the future. So I'm sure that that's top of mind. And certainly there's the issue of jobs for Soytech, which, you know, is a San Diego-based company. But that said, if you were put in charge of the state today, if you were Governor Brown or you were head of the Public Utilities Commission, Donna, if you don't want these projects, which clearly have a lot of negative impacts, what would your solution be to meet renewable power goals and help do our part to reduce the greenhouse gas problem?
Well, there's been studies conducted in San Diego County, Los Angeles County, and I know that in San Diego County they've determined there's over 7,000 megawatts of capacity on existing rooftops and over parking lots. So for point-of-use generation where the energy is used, and they can even put in some battery storage, that, in our minds, is the better answer, because then you don't have to have $2 billion Sunrise Powerlink projects and $435 million eco-substation projects and all of the water that's used for these remote projects.
And yet that's going to take some legislative change, because right now some of the incentives for rooftop solar are actually astoundingly going away, and the renewable energy mandates coming down from the state are almost forcing these industrial-scale projects and not allowing the consideration of things like rooftop solar or, you know, personal-scale wind turbines or, you know, incentives and investments for that. So the whole thing seems a little bit upside down and backwards.
Well, aside from filing lawsuits, we're also working towards research and outreach on the county and other
state legislation.
Well, the other areas of the state have done what they call community choice aggregation, which is an alternative to the monopoly utilities.
Right.
Where an entity, the San Diego County or the region, could form their own community choice aggregation, and they would be responsible for purchasing the energy, generating the energy, and they could sell it at a nonprofit rate.
Yeah, so if listeners had solar on their roofs, they would be able to sell it back to the community choice aggregate, which is like a publicly owned power company that would be an alternative to SDG&E, and they could actually make some money at it and
have reduced rates, which is ideally the way that it would be. But right now you've got SDG&E monopoly utility out there, and they get a guaranteed rate of return on big infrastructure like all these power lines, and they want to do anything they can to block rooftop solar, which is the opposite of what is the, in my opinion, the best for the ratepayers and the
problem we've
taxpayers.
Seen over and over with these projects, and it's worth noting that it isn't just this one project, huge though it is. This is one of several very, very massive industrial-scale energy projects that have been plopped into this area or proposed for this same area that's really being disproportionately targeted for the energy development. Thule Wind, Hecumbe Solar, the Sunrise Powerlink, the Eco Substation. We could go on and on. I mean, I know there's many more of them. What's the answer here, Donna? It seems like what happens every time one of these projects comes up before the supervisors is that East County's supervisor, Diane Jacob, typically will speak out, voice concerns, often vote against these things, and the other four just sort of rubber stamp it, ignore every single concern, and vote them through. What is the answer to getting people in the San Diego region to understand the consequences for San Diego and sort of the loss of the playground area out here for San Diego and our back country with these decisions?
Well, we need people to mobilize and throughout San Diego County to call their supervisors and other supervisors and tell them they do not want to see the backcountry industrialized, that they would prefer rooftop solar and energy generation where it's consumed on public buildings and over parking lots rather than destroying the backcountry to build much more expensive projects that the ratepayers and taxpayers have to support.
And listeners, if you've just tuned in, we are talking with Donna Tisdale, who is the chair of the Boulevard Planning Group and the founder of Backcountry Against Dumps, or BAD, a community-based organization that has announced it is going to sue the county if supervisors on February 4th approve the very controversial industrial-scale Soytec solar projects for the Boulevard area. Don, if people want more information about this, or they want to get in touch, they want to maybe support the nonprofit with contributions or something, how can they reach you?
My phone number is 619-766-4170, and my email is tisdale.donna@gmail.com.
Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ?
Yes, East County matters, and what happens in our neighborhoods could happen in your neighborhood, and we would like to see a better alternative supported by the majority of the community.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Unlike, say, wind energy that can only go in an area that has very strong winds, a solar farm or industrial-scale solar project could go anywhere. So, you know, when they run out of land out here in the rural East County, it could just as easily be proposed in North County, in South County, in Central County.
They are being proposed there. That's why we're promoting point-of-use generation. That is the better alternative.
Yeah, there you go. Don, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Friends of the Descanso Library need volunteers, including a new treasurer this month. The current treasurer will train you on QuickBooks and the treasurer's duties. The group also seeks a chairperson for the Everyone's a Reader program at Descanso Elementary School. Training is available, and last year's volunteers are still interested in participating. They just need a chair. More volunteer opportunities are available. If you're interested, please visit the library's website or call 619-445-8814. The Descanso Library is located at 9545 River Drive in Descanso. This has been a public service announcement for Friends of the Descanso Library. Reporting for KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, January the 30th, 2014. I'm Mike Clifford. Among the stories on our Friday rundown, the Keystone Pipeline bill could be on President Obama's desk by next week for an expected veto, the U.S. Senate on the verge of addressing veteran suicide, and Super Bowl Sunday safety tips, why you should know your TV tipping point. Topping our news, the Senate voted 60-36 Thursday in favor of building the Keystone Pipeline. The Columbus Dispatch reports Ohio's Republican Senator Rob Portman calls it a common-sense bill that will create good-paying jobs, while Senate Democrat Sherrod Brown says there is little long-term benefit for the nation. The bill could be on President Obama's desk next week, and a veto is expected. Environmental groups suing over the expansion of one of California's largest crude oil operations. Lori Abbott reports the lawsuit contends the San Joaquin Air Pollution Control District illegally approved permits without environmental review of the risks of importing millions of gallons of toxic and potentially explosive oil.
Matt Krogh with Forest Ethics says 5 million Californians live in the evacuation zone for an oil train derailment or explosion. He says it's too dangerous to allow the Bakersfield crude terminal to increase traffic without investigating the threat to air quality and public safety.
You see the potential for these oil trains passing through every major population center of California, crossing critical waterways and aquifer recharge zones, crossing through, you know, valuable farmland.
The lawsuit filed by Earth Justice maintains air district officials approved the permits in a piecemeal fashion to keep the project from getting public scrutiny. The Kern County terminal opened last year and is allowed to accept up to 100 crude oil trains a day.
Many states may look longingly at Florida's budget projections for the coming fiscal year, but Phil Latzman reports the surplus has triggered another round in the fight over whether to expand Medicaid.
The state of Florida finds itself in an enviable position. It's expecting a $1 billion surplus in the upcoming fiscal year budget. Governor Rick Scott's proposed budget includes increasing public school spending, but it does not include expanding Florida's Medicaid program. The governor credits an improving economy for the windfall and says he wants to return some of the money to Floridians in the form of tax cuts.
People know how best to spend their own money, and that's why now that we have a major budget surplus, we are giving Floridians back $673 million in their money.
Medicaid expansion would send billions of dollars in federal aid to the state under the Affordable Care Act. But Republicans who own a supermajority in the Florida State House remain staunchly opposed to the idea of federally run health care.
Veterans in Arizona and across the nation may gain access to improved mental health services if the U.S. Senate passes legislation linked to veteran suicide. We get more on the story from Troy Wild.
The Senate is expected to pass the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention for American Veterans Act early next week. It would provide funding to evaluate the mental health and suicide prevention programs of the VA and the Defense Department, also improve training and enhance collaboration. Jace Elliston is a Phoenix area Gulf War veteran who lives with post-traumatic stress disorder and says almost two dozen vets take their lives every day.
It's a massive problem. 22 a day is unconscionable. It's got to be changed, and anything that we can do to make it better and a review of the systems that we have in place is probably a great idea.
Elliston points out that the numbers total about 8,000 veteran suicides per year. The legislation is named for a Marine veteran who struggled with PTSD and committed suicide in 2011 at age 28. The Clay Hunt bill passed unanimously in the House and the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee earlier this month.
If you aren't sure what the Earned Income Tax Credit is, you're not alone. Today is EITC Awareness Day. It calls attention to the tax credit for low to middle income workers.
There are federal and state earned income tax credits, but by law, the state credit in Colorado can't become a permanent annual credit until the state has enough money for refunds under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. A bill to untie that requirement is being introduced at the Capitol on Friday. Allie Michelson at the Colorado Fiscal Institute says there's no reason to delay the credit and plenty of reasons to put a little more money into workers' pockets.
The bulk of this credit goes to families making $30,000, $40,000 a year. It's spent immediately in the local economy. It's something that supports small businesses.
Amounts depend on a taxpayer's income, family size, and filing status, but the federal EITC refund can be in the thousands of dollars, enough to lift 4 million households above the poverty line. I'm Chris Thomas.
And finally, things can get rowdy on Super Bowl Sunday. Mary Sherman's been talking with medical experts who are sending this caution about the dangers of unsecured television sets.
Don Gardner, an injury prevention specialist with Cincinnati Children's, says while big screens and older-style box TVs are especially heavy, newer flat-screen televisions can be top-heavy and easy to tip.
Every 30 minutes, a child is injured from a TV that's falling. So they're crushing their chest. It creates head injuries. And then in some instances, kids are killed by being crushed by a TV.
To prevent TV tip-overs, Gardner says televisions should be placed on low, stable pieces of furniture.
The experts say keep in mind a 50-inch LCD television can weigh more than 60 pounds, while a 50-inch plasma TV can top out at over 100 pounds. This reminder, tune back tomorrow for our weekend update. For now, this is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Last year was the hottest year on Earth since 1880. According to two separate analyses by NASA and by scientists at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. In addition, 9 of the 10 hottest years ever measured have occurred since 2000. This trend continues a long-term warming of the planet, according to an analysis of surface temperature measurements by scientists at NASA's Goddard Institute of Space Studies in New York. The Goddard Institute's director says the warming trend is largely driven by increase in carbon dioxide and other human emissions into the planet's atmosphere. The majority of that warming has occurred in the past 3 decades. Regional differences in temperature are more strongly affected by weather dynamics than the global average. For example, in the U.S. in 2014, parts of the Midwest and East Coast were unusually cool, while Alaska and three western states, California, Arizona, and Nevada, experienced their warmest years on record. But overall, the planet continues to heat up. Scientists at NASA and NOAA agree. NASA's analysis incorporates surface temperature measurements from 6,300 weather stations, ships, research stations in the Antarctic, and other data collection points. NOAA scientists used much of the same raw temperature data, but employ their own methods to estimate global temperatures. The Goddard Institute is a NASA laboratory managed by the Earth Science Division of the agency's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. The laboratory is affiliated with Columbia University's Earth Institute and the School of Engineering and Applied Science in New York. NASA monitors Earth's vital signs from land, air, and space, with a fleet of satellites, as well as airborne and ground-based observations, to see how our planet is changing. The agency works with institutions in the United States and around the world that contribute to understanding and protecting our home planet. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Hayden Parsley.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.